You are listening to Positive Living Vibrations with Sarah Troy.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to Positive Living Vibrations with Sarah Troy and her guest, Michael Ray Scholars. He's commonly known as Mike, the head coach of the American football. He was born in May, so it makes him a Taurus. So maybe there's that stubborn streak of following his path, undeniably. He is a USA Tour national champion in Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. He is in Europe, following a passion, following his diva, following his dreams, and he is there coaching teams to championships basically all the way through Europe and enjoying every moment of it. He has the delight of actually being able to learn about cultures, meet different people, broaden his perspectives, and at the same time teach something that is very close and very passionate to him. His latest accomplishment was a perfect season in the Langel Single of Germany. He has won a perfect season in every country he's coached. Now, that's quite some record. Throughout his amazing journey, there was developed a comrade formula for success, something that really was based in a philosophy that withstands ethnic culture and language differences. This philosophy succeeds on a relationship, family, team, national and international level. And the philosophy can be summarized in four words: the unity equals true empowerment, which is the name of the show today. So, having just left the Olympics, we have seen camaraderie really come into play. Everybody's been rooting for their own countries, for their own teams, but it's so wonderful to see teams support from other countries, support each other, to cheer people on, especially those that have had challenges or adversity, and to see people come through when people have lost by a minuscule of a second. The support has been there. If people have crashed or burned or had anything, you know, go wrong, other teams from other countries have been there to support them, because when it comes down to it, it is the art of the sport and the passion that is there that drives them. So would you say that is the same for your philosophy over the sport that you teach? It's about the camaraderie, the passion, and the love for the support, as for the sport. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you for having me. Yes, I would agree wholeheartedly that the beautiful part about sport competition is the camaraderie, the obvious sacrifice of the teammates for the coming good of the whole. We try to live our lives like that, but I think one of the true attractions to a sport is that even the casual fan can see by observing true sports competitions that the team members have to sacrifice for the team to win. And so they get to see this philosophy played out live on TV with real sacrifices, real blood, sweat, and tears. And that's a compelling event to witness in mankind.
It most certainly is. And, you know, we know that bottom line, everything is, it wants that winning goal, that championship. And that's what you're working for. But really, it's... Right. It's, yes, you're competing with another team, but in a lot of it is the competition within you to always be your excellence, isn't it? To bring your excellence to every game.
Absolutely. I mean, if you have the opportunity to actually speak with a team member of a championship team, they won't tell you about how they felt about holding the championship trophy. What they'll tell you about is the beautiful memories they have of the months and months of sacrifices together with their teammates, all coming together, because at first they're strangers. Mm-hmm. And over time they build trust. And then over time that trust becomes fate. And then over more time they start to have a communal environment. Mm-hmm. And then with some success, they start to respect each other, not so much as friends, but as family members.
Yeah.
Once you get to that level of respect and mutual I mean, you can imagine like this. This is what I tell my players. I say, American football is, you know a little bit about, you have Canadian football
yeah.
in Canada. And if I'm a running back, I'm trying to score a touchdown. And I have to have the big guys, the linemen blocking for me, okay? And they're going to do their jobs because they're on the team. And they're going to try to move who's ever out of the way for them. And they have to protect the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the one who's running the show. Now, they will do that job as well. But imagine what they would do if that quarterback was their brother. Imagine how much effort they would do to protect him if they felt of him as he was their real brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you try to build with this philosophy over the course of time. You try to build up this type of respect, and everyone involved in the organization has the same importance. Whether it's the water boy or the guy who's on the starter on the national team, once they realize that this is a true philosophy and the coaches believe it because they're reading from the same philosophy that I've taught them and shared with them, and even the administration, the board has the same philosophy. Once this whole organization believes this, and then they share it with their family members. And their family members share it with their friends. You have this great.
Yeah.
So when you see a championship team, you really do see something that represents the entire community.
Mm-hmm.
They have any championship team will tell you that they knew that they were going to be champions long before they actually won the trophy. Anyone will, because it takes a time to do it. But once they put this into place and you have this mutual respect for one another, it's a magical thing to experience. And I'm so happy to have been able to share this again and again.
And, you know, unity for community, right? You know, we are responsible for our individualism, for what we bring to the game. We're responsible for our outlook, our positive outlook, for bringing our own excellence, trying our best, being the best that we can be. But we're doing it for that unity of community, because by bringing our individual excellence, we are actually allowing the collective now to become very harmonious. And it's not just relying on the quarterback or just relying on the defense guy. It's not about, you know, standing out, I'll do better next game. It's bringing that excellence every time, because at that time, when you're in that game, that is the be all and the end all of everything in your existence, isn't it? To win that game in that moment, because you're not just doing it for the prize. You're doing it because you're honoring each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's a terrific way to view this, is because when you get to the point of a championship, yes, it's, you know, it's not show I succeed, it's show we succeed. Not just your teammates at this point, your champ, it's their families, because you've met them all by then. It's their friends, because they've been to support you at all the, at least home competitions by then. And it's a very tremendous amount of pressure that you gladly can absorb and thrive in, because it's, you know, that you're not doing it alone.
Yeah.
So it's easier to accomplish and to bring your best to display and for all others to see when you know that's dependent upon you is doing
and
the
that,
same.
And that, you know, on those bad days or those off days, which everybody has, because that's being human, is that, you know, I've got your back, you know, I'll help you through this, or, you know, I'll pick up the pace for you this time if that's, you know, what is needed. And it's, there isn't assumption and there isn't a blame, you know, because everybody knows each other and everybody knows what they can bring to the table. So if somebody isn't, they know it's not them being lazy, it's that there's something worrying them or it's an off day, and then there's that support that they get from the rest of the teammates. And that's collaborative, working together.
Absolutely. I mean, and to touch on the point I just made, I mean, when you know that everyone involved in your organization is giving their all.
Yeah.
If they make a mistake, well, then you know it's just that. It's a mistake.
Yeah.
You know it's not them not giving their best effort, because you already know they're giving their all. So when you know someone has just made a genuine mistake, it's a lot easier to forgive them and to move on and to encourage them to do better, because you know they're going to try their best the next time. That's the way we, you know, I have this philosophy. When I coach, I'm, you know, you think of an American football coach, a screamer, a yeller, but I always surprise my coaching staff when I get them together for the first time, because I tell them I never yell at players unless they do something good. And that's truly my philosophy. Now, I don't mind if they coach differently, because I want the coaches to be successful in what their techniques that they feel most comfortable with. But as the head coach, I try to set the example. The players like to hear me yell by the time we get to the point of a championship, because they know something terribly good has happened. And that's a philosophy that I have, because I know that, you know, if they make a mistake, I know, I already know, because I believe in them from the, even before they get there, I believe in them. I go, okay, I know you made a mistake. I know you're going to correct this. And I know we're going to get it right the next time. So I'm not worried about it. You know, that play is over. That's never, we never have to relive that again. Now let's go forward. And that's something that I try to get their teammates to adapt, the coaches to adapt, the administration to adapt. And again, once we get on the same page and we start practicing this philosophy, it's truly a magical thing. And I think it uplifts everyone to perform at a higher level.
What happens when you have somebody, you know, like Beckham, who's, you know, the cream of the crop, and right, the focus is on him. And, you know, is I mean, it must be hard for somebody who carries that burden. You know, obviously they're getting the big money, but there's always going to be one that stands out. You know, that is that,
of course,
that media focus. And you kind of need that in a team, because you need somebody there that kind of draws that media focus to you, that makes you stand out. But how do you balance it within a team where there isn't that resentment because that person's getting all the media?
Well, here's the thing. you just saw a great example of that in the American Super Bowl. You had one team that had that Beckham by the name of Peyton Manning, mm-hmm, you know, the greatest quarterback ever, and coach, you know, and all that, the pressure. They got to the Super Bowl because of him, you know, the best statistical season in the history of American football by Peyton Manning, 2013 season. And then you had the other team, the Seattle Seahawks, who had no stars, but they had a great team. And they won. Now, I've been in both situations. Obviously, my philosophy favors no stars. You know, mm-hmm, someone can be a superstar, but in the locker room and to his teammates and to the people who the coaching staff, he's gonna be no more important than the guy who's a third string. And I truly coach like that. Now, I know that all organizations are not run like that. If there is that situation where you have a team that's dependent upon a star, sure. I mean, I embrace that. I want any player to be as successful as he can be. And I was a professional player myself, and I know, particularly in the younger part of my career when I was more selfish as a player, you want that attention. Mm-hmm. And if you succeed, you deserve it. But again, the player can't be bigger than the team. Or you can, but you won't have a champion.
Right. Or if you have been, you know, signaled out because of your game playing, whatever, it's, as you say, locker room, you're all the same. But if you are that quote essentially spokesperson, you are that, mm-hmm, beacon for that team, then make sure that you're doing it for the unity of the team. You know, be that voice that speaks not just of the I, but of the we of the team.
Yes, and that's why, you know, Peyton Manning is so well, you know, accepted throughout the sport, because he is a great example of someone who knows how to be a leader. You know, he's the son of an All-Pro quarterback. Mm-hmm. His brother is Super Bowls for the New York Giants, so he grew up surrounded by, you know, sports idols and things like that. So he was well groomed to handle this responsibility. But some other successful players are not so well adapted to that, because it is the ultimate team sport.
Yeah.
And if you look at anything you do, to be at the highest level, you have to approach it like it's a family, whether it be a real family, mm-hmm, a corporation, a university level, or a professional level, a competition. Any time you want to see an organization that's run at the very top, just take all these higher echelon corporations, the fundamental philosophy that they have in place is that the workers feel like they're part of the team. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're part of, they feel like they matter. And of course, you don't have that in other, you know, corporations like the financial industries and things like that.
Definitely not. They could adopt some of the philosophy completely. How did you come about this philosophy? Has this just been a life's journey? Is this something that it's always been within you, or something that through your work, through your journey of coaching, that you know you've come to realize yourself works?
Okay. What happened was, over the first 2 years I came over, I was just a player. And, excuse me, I have to plug my power in.
This is what happens when you have internet radio, folks.
Sorry about
that's
that.
Okay. We don't want you going off the air, so that's all right.
Okay. I came over, I was lucky as a pro player. We came my first year in Europe, in Sweden. Okay. And then it was a very small team from a very small town in Uppsala, Sweden. And we won against a team from a big town like in Stockholm. And what made that team so special was that, you know, everyone knew each other. Everyone, you know, we had dinner at each other's homes and things like that. It was very, you know, close-knit. We called it at that time a family. Okay, so, okay, coincidence. And then after that, my 2 seasons later, I was the head coach in Norway, and we happened to win a championship also. And I, of course, that was my first real head coaching job. So you fall back on what's been successful. So I tried to instill that philosophy. And 2 years later, another championship in another country. And the philosophy of true unity equals true empowerment. Because I tried to get the players to bond together as a family. That was more important to me than teaching them the sport, was teaching them to respect their players. Because you have players from, like in Norway, we had players from Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, USA, and Canada, and you have a lot of cultures that are coming together for the first time through sport, and the only way that you could get over this what do you call it, uneasiness or anxiety that you would feel when you're put in a situation where you have to trust someone that's from a culture that you know nothing about. At that time, most Norwegians, the only thing that they knew about America was from MTV. And
right.
as far as our culture, and we had we did a lot of team building exercises where we did things away from the sport, where you had to like invite people into your homes for a week and things like that. But basically, over weeks and months, they learned how to instill trust on a family level to their teammates, and then we brought all this back to the sport playing field. And like I expressed, we had a championship there. So then it was set. Then that was my philosophy from that for any team that I ever approach, was that if we're going to be a champion, we're going to have to first learn to treat our teammates as brothers, family members. That's easier said than done. But once they realized I wasn't joking, and then once, of course, you have a little success, it's once you have a couple of, you know, success at a couple of different teams, it's easier to sell your philosophy because, okay, they can see examples of how, okay, you did this here and it worked. You did this here and it worked. And I tried it in personal relationships and it was working. I shared this with some friends in the corporate management and they were giving me this fantastic feedback about how they got their management team to adopt this philosophy and how they treated their, you know, they had their sales staffs in their homes and things like that. And how so I saw it succeed on many different levels. So I adapted it and I had a lot of attention from it from a while back, but I never really sat down like I am with you today and shared it because I was afraid that I was going to lose some type of competitive edge. So I kind of
No, I think you gain it, actually. I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, I think sports, for a long time, you know, especially like in the Olympics where the spotlight is on, and, you know, you would see it in certain countries where everything was so competitive at all costs, very cutthroat,
right.
Got very dishonorable, you know, got to be who would ever pay the highest, you know, would get the scores. And it was especially in, you know, in like, things like ice skating,
Right.
etc., you know, where was at the discretion of the
Yes.
judge
Yep.
rather than obviously the you know, the
Right.
time or the amount that you've jumped. But and it's it just put a bad taste on the entire sporting industry. And we have come now, I think, to you know, again, another story I'm going to share from the Olympics that really touched people's hearts. We had a Canadian in speed skating that in his qualifying run fell, and just, you know, it's just they are such sharp blades and just slip, you know, there it went from underneath him. And his fellow mate, who was meant to go into a race, gave up his position as an Olympian, his whole family there to see him, but he decided the other guy was a better bet and that he should go through, and gave up his chance to be an Olympian and let the other guy go in the race ahead of him, and he got silver. And you know, that again, sacrifice. He knew that he wasn't as good as the other guy, probably wouldn't get anywhere near the medal, even though this was his moment to be
Right.
that Olympian, to get on that ice, to feel that. He gave that position up for the greater good, for the Canadian there to represent their country. And of course, he's being, you know, treated as a hero amongst us right now for that sacrifice.
I mean, that's true. I mean, that is true. I hadn't heard that story. That is a beautiful story, and that is a perfect example of their Canadian team pulling together and having unity to empower their team to succeed on a high level. So that is a great example of that. And at the end of the day, in anything you do, or any type of competition or business, it's, you know, how do you feel about, you know, yourself at the end of the day? Now, I know we live in a money-driven society, and that's the be-all and end-all. I just had someone very close to me made some comment about money just last week when I was talking to them on the telephone in the USA about they judged someone. They were telling me their impression of someone, and they spoke, they thought highly of this person because this person never had to ask them for any money. Now, I didn't see how that's
no relevant.
But this is a person that I really care about and love, and I was like, you really see people like that. You know, I had to just step. It didn't even hit me that that's what this person said until I was off the phone and a couple of hours later. And I just like, and this guy, he's in a leadership position, and you know, it's just wow. That's sad that we have to view people like that. I mean,
the moment we start putting the dollar sign on people, we've lost the true worth of that person.
Well, absolutely. You know? I mean, you know, because I know a lot of people who are very successful financially and not such good people. I know a lot of people who are not so well financially, but they could be, but they are doing other things that are more fulfilling to them. And some of them are just haven't reached that plateau yet, but they're outstanding individuals. So I don't think you should just go right to someone's bank account. Like if someone has a bank account, like the people.
You know, how did they get it, and whose back did they get it on?
Yeah, like,
you know, and I have got nothing. I have nothing against people being rich.
Not.
Be as rich as you possibly, if it's been made honorably, and that you are there willing to share that money into helping other people have that same wonderful experience of, you know, abundance in their own lives. So, you know,
right,
that the money is good if it's spent right, with good intentions.
Yes, and I think that's important. Those who are financially successful, that they, you know, make efforts to make sure everyone can live an honorable and decent life. Because this world that we live in is just phenomenal. I've got to see so much of it because of this sport and just personal travel. And you know, there's more than enough land and food and for everyone to live comfortably, but yet you see so much different happening.
We have and, should not have hunger in this world today. We should not have it. And you know, obviously genetic modified food is better, but it's not the solution. And we can grow with such beautiful soil around the world. And if we eat less and eat better and eat more considerately without being so wasteful, we would feed everyone in the world. And, you know, that's a lot to do with the philosophy and mentality to everything, right? To the sport. It's being the best that you can, but not at the cost of someone else.
Absolutely. I mean, if I could have any impact upon this world, it would be to let people in leadership positions to embrace this, you know, from their positions of power to there was once this phrase, trickle down economy, but you know, that was just a phrase, but I would really love to see that put into action. I think that particularly in countries like, you know, Canada and the United States, I mean, that should be a number one priority. No child in America should ever be hungry, or child in Canada should ever be hungry. And, you know, there's a lot social and economic indicators that that you look at. But the one that I try to follow the most is the percentage of national debt to the gross domestic product. That's my true indication of how I can see how well a country is. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, do you know in America, the percentage of our debit that we owe to our national, our gross domestic product is 105%.
Yeah.
So we owe more than we produce.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've been in Norway and you've been in these other countries that, I mean, they're just so well run. And, you know, everybody has that opportunity. And it seems to be the government is really working for the people. And it is about the people, you know, being fruitful. Because when they are, you know, they produce more. You know, invest in the people, and you'll be receiving the profit. But look for the profit at the expense of the people, you're going to receive bankruptcy.
Well, it's all, you know, due to the politicians. They are elected, and the people elect them in good faith. And you know, a country can't get in debit without the approval of their leaders, and the leaders are de facto the politicians. So for America to get to owe 105% of their gross domestic product, I mean, that's, you can only look at one group of people for that. I mean, I'm sure that the average American has no idea that maybe they do now, but I truly doubt it, that they'd be sitting calmly in their homes and going to work every day knowing that even though they're working and they're producing millions and millions, they actually owe more than they produce as an entire country.
Yeah.
And for what?
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, you know, your travels, living in Europe and traveling around as much as you have, you know, you've had that wonderful perspective of being able to look back home and see the issues that are there compared to how other countries are running. What's been the most biggest impact that you've had by living and working in Europe, as opposed to working back home in the States?
Actually, there's two. The first is the literacy rate. You mentioned Norway, and I can mention Sweden. These countries have almost absolutely no illiteracy. I once had a 30-minute conversation with a homeless man in Oslo, and he spoke English better than I. He was homeless reading the Wall Street Journal. And of course, English is like his third language, but he spoke English better than myself, very well educated, but he was homeless by choice, some type of protest or something like that. And that's one dramatic difference. And the most dramatic difference is the healthcare system, which in your country, you have a better grasp on it, but in the U.S., there's still some debate, but You realize if you have insurance in Europe and then you go, or most parts of Europe, and then you go back to the U.S., that there's a dramatic difference in healthcare.
Yep.
The cost for the same procedure in USA could be 10 times the cost as it would be in some of these countries in Europe. And of course, the insurance is cost yeah. is yeah. maybe 100 times yeah. more.
I mean, it just seems out of proportion, doesn't it? You know, it's like, when are you going to get it? That by nurturing and keeping your people healthy, making them feel that they're worthy, that they count in life, encouraging them to be the best that they can be and to work collaboratively with other people is in the country's best interest. When it's always about judgment and competitiveness, the color of your skin, your religion, you know, the car you drive, your bank balance, and this whole one-uppity thing that seems to be the trend there, it's put your country in bankruptcy, and for what? And there doesn't seem to be that value of individual life. It just seems to be profit at any cost.
Yes, I agree. You just touched on the point that, like I said, I observed with a friend in the United States that I was speaking to about a week ago. Yes, there's people care. People, I noticed this. I was home one time. You know, I had been living and working in Europe for a while, and I came home for a visit. And I was just with some family and friends, and they could name any car that drove by, that new car, they could name the model. And not just who made it, but like the model number. And I couldn't. I recognize that logo. That's a Mercedes. I recognize that logo. That's a BMW. But that's as far as I could get. I couldn't actually go into the detail of the X67 class series, and because they're so entrenched in this materialism, for them that does matter. I realized I was different when I spoke at my father's funeral, and you know, at his eulogy, and. I was, you know, I didn't have anything planned, so I just thought of a story from life that related me to him. And I said that I was working at this store called the Bag and Baggage in Dallas, Texas. They sold high-end luggage and attaches and things like that, wallets and purses. And I knew nothing, but when I, over the course of working there, I learned all about the fine symmetry and design of the coach and the French luggage and the Halliburton attaches and Tumi briefcases and things like this. And they also, in the back, they ran a repair. This top-end luggage had a little handle broken. People could bring it back in, and they could send it off and repair it. And I was strictly a salesperson, but one time I was at the desk and a lady came back. She said, "I'd like my Louis Vuitton. Here's the ticket." I said, "Okay, what color is it?" Now, this is back when, and then she said, "It's a Louis Vuitton." And I said, "Okay, what color is it?" And then she said, "It's a Louis Vuitton." And at that time, Louis Vuittons were all one color. Uh-huh. But I had no fashion sense at all. So I had no idea that people would pay that much money for the luggage,
yep.
or that's all the same color.
I know. They all look the same, and there's so many knockoffs. How do you know what's real and what isn't? Yeah.
But my mindset was like, I never really got into it. Even when I was working in the industry,
yes.
I was never.
Well, I mean, again, Europe is different, isn't it? It's about the quality. You have the good car. That's why so many people drive like BMWs and Mercedes, because it's the practical thing of being on the road, reliable.
Yeah,
it's
Germany, yes.
You know, the home that they have, the clothes they buy, that, you know, they buy good quality as opposed to mass, right? Because
absolutely.
They want something that is of quality that's going to last, rather than and you know, not let them down, as opposed to having an abundance of something that's name tagged for whom, for what?
Yeah, that's a fascinating point. You're right. If you're in Sweden, a Saab or a Volvo, that's the Ford or Chrysler.
Yeah.
If you're in Germany, a BMW or Audi is the Ford or Chrysler. And interesting thing, though, I purchased a car in Germany, but I wanted an American car. I tried to be patriotic. And I purchased a car, it was a Ford Mondeo. And I was trying to tell us the relatives that yes, but they couldn't find it. You see, because this car is a Ford. It was a Ford car, but it was only made. I think it was made in Belgium or something like that. It was only made in Europe because they couldn't sell their normal Ford cars in Germany. They had to make another car that was at the same standard as a BMW or a Mercedes, but they wouldn't sell any cars. And right. So that's another fascinating thing that is that you're right. The standards are higher. They do, in essence, you saw what happened in Iceland, so things can change. But in essence, the government did put the community before the personal profit. Now you're seeing things rise. Like I think in Norway, I think it's up to the percentage of the national debit is up to 29%. It was probably less than 15% just 10 years ago. So the politicians are. I don't want to say this the wrong way, but they're having an influence because that's what's happening. Because Norway has enough oil money. I heard someone say when I was there, they have enough oil money for none of their citizens to have to work for like 50 or 100 years. So there's no way that their percentage of debit compared to their notes
should reflect
no
that way.
Way. Yeah. It shouldn't be rising. So there has to be something going on.
Yep, that's the trouble. You know, you get that corruption in there. You know, it's like a virus and it infests. So just as you know, you get somebody with a bad attitude coming to a game.
Yeah,
it's going to affect everybody else in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a harsh situation. You hear so many rumors about what goes on in the political world. So I can't, you know, I'm not in that environment. I can only go by the rumors that I've heard. But, you know, it's from what I understand, if a politician comes in and tries to do the wrong thing, they're eliminated. So I don't know how that works. That's just the general rumors that I've heard. So with those type of stakes, it's hard to get a good man in there.
It's exactly. Yes, in like North Korea right now, and you know, anybody that votes against the guy has them, you know, killed and was killed his uncle for going against him. And you know, that's dictatorship. That's the regime.
Right.
And you know, what we are seeing is, you know, that in Brussels right now, there's all the protesters are being shot and killed, and they're closing any media out there whatsoever. So some people are getting things out there, but they're literally closing down the internet and everything. Like, you know, we know this is going on. I think what's happened in the world now is that we're no longer going to tolerate it. We're no longer going to turn a blind eye to it. And, you know, we may not be able to get in there and kind of fight along with others, but at least we can bring a certain amount of pressure or shame or something down on there,
right.
Even vibrationally, by caring vibrationally and raising those vibrations, you're already helping people. So don't think you're powerless. We can do something.
I don't feel like I'm powerless. You know what I do? I am powerless. That's totally true. But, you know, if we ever decide to have true unity, well, then of course magical things could happen and happen quickly. But
yes.
It's so hard to get people to truly unite when they're more concerned about what the Kardashians are doing, and of course there's trolls and on the internet and so they try to discredit anyone who actually says something credible, and so it's a curious situation because I look at mankind just like this fantastic a fairy tale that we all grew up watching when we were children called The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. We always had the power. We just she had to just unite her shoes together. Yeah. We just need to unite.
Well, that's the whole thing is that unless somebody's in empowerment themselves, you know, you have to find that value within you. You have to find that love of self. You always say place importance upon yourself. And that's very different from self-importance. Self-importance is derived by insecurity and ego. But by placing importance upon yourself and being the very best you can be, not for anyone else, for you to stand tall in, for you to be able to say, I love who I am, what I'm doing, where I'm going, then you bring that to the community and let your cup runneth over. And your community then benefits from that and learns to love themselves and unite that love. But it does stem from us first. You know, we can't go in somewhere broken and say, fix me. People can help you, they can guide you, they can nurture you, but it comes down to it, we have to take that ownership of self and our own actions our own choices and our own beliefs.
I absolutely agree. And of course, when people band together, it's easier. It's
much easier.
Easier for people to have the courage, because some people do, but they don't have the courage. It's a lot easier to accomplish the type of change that we've touched upon today when you have a group of people who are like-minded. I tell a team, when I get a team, I say that if you give me 60 men who all believe in each other, and who all support each other and all have the same goal, there's no one that can defeat them. Now, you can imagine that with 60 million people. So.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that's the whole point, is that we do have the power. And, you know, like you're talking about 60 people coming together, then the domino effect it has on their families. You know, I have people saying to me, well, how many people are listening to the shows? And I said, I don't care as long as there's one. You know, how many people do you have an effect on their life? To me, it's hard to measure, but as long as there's one. And if we look to having an effect on one person and an, you know, domino effect going out there, we can reach around the world very, very quickly instead of always having to look at the big mass of numbers, because they're not always true.
People realize, I mean, you can't wake up in the morning and look at your window and see a blue sky, and then all of a sudden you see these chemtrails. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
People have to realize that there's something going on.
Yeah.
They have snow that doesn't melt under flame. There's something going on, and clearly that the only way you're going to get any real answers is to come together and take control of our own destiny. Because if the days of trusting elected officials to do that for our children is...
There's something that happens to them the moment they get into power. And I think it's just unfortunately that however much they were opposed to the cesspool, when they come to power, they become part of that cesspool, whether they wanted to or not. And, you know, it's a virus that keeps growing. I'm very much Delilah. You know, we don't need to throw a stone at Goliath. All we need to do is come together, form that strength, that vibration, that interlocking unity for that community of supporting each other. The Goliaths of the world will start crumbling because we will stop needing them. We will stop empowering them because we're empowering each other. And if we do that in that strength and that foundation and that vibration, we become the empowerment for the world rather than one person becoming the power of the world.
I think so. You have to, as a people, make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be, if not, just like the, we're at 105% of our national gross domestic product now, it'll just keep rising, rising and rising, and the climate will keep getting worse and worse and worse. You'll see more and more people starving, and you'll see a greater separation between the haves and the have-nots. And this is from the richest countries in the world.
Yep, exactly. So, everything has its cycle. And, you know, if you get complacent or you get greedy or you get nonchalant or you don't start paying attention to your people, you know, that is the beginning of your decline. The amount of people that I've interviewed and also who are hosts on this station on PLV Radio that belong to corporate had very, very successful lives, you know, were making good money, doing very well, only to just one day say, my God, where is my soul? Where is my heart? I may be good at this, but no amount of money I take home is fulfilling me. And they literally walked away from it and, you know, found that heart and soul passion and feel richer and more abundant today than they ever did with the paycheck they had before.
Although the pay can be pretty well over here, believe it or not, I actually was a pretty high level. I was a Northern California district sales manager for 10M Corporation before I came to Europe. I was actually a pretty high up level. I had 7 sales offices in Northern California that I was in charge of. 120 sales associates worked on them. And this is when I was just like 22. So I understand.
A natural born salesman.
It was just a crazy job in that I got an opportunity to do it as a branch manager in Kansas City and was very successful at it, broke some sales records and got promoted up really within 6 months. But I understand that part of it. And I understand that, you know, I was living in had a house in Pacifica, California, where I could see the ocean from every window except the kitchen. and I had a French gardener who came to did my, and this is when I was 22. So I understand the intoxication of that type of lifestyle.
Yes.
And you, there's no reason why you can't have that type of lifestyle and do the things that you know need to be done to assure that yes. everyone has an opportunity to live well, not just.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, again, it is not about not being rich. You know, if you know, money does allow for opportunity, and there are people out there, you know, that if you're making money and you're spending money, you're helping somebody have a career. You know, you're supporting, the real estate, your retail, and, you know, you're giving somebody a job because you're out there spending that money. You're generating it. But at the same time, right. generate an opportunity for people. Invest in your communities. Right. You know, support your local mm-hmm. football or soccer or hockey or whatever it is, local community team. Give people a chance to find that within them, their abilities within them. Purely by saying to people, I care. And I'm here to help
yes.
is already a massive, because how many people go under the radar that are never seen or heard or noticed or anything? By saying, I see you, I care, I'm investing in you, already you're making such a difference. Yeah.
And that's the only way I know how to manage, like I said, so everyone's yes. important. I mean, and it truly is. I mean, I think that should apply to any community. If everyone is truly important within that community, then everyone will succeed.
We all want to
the basic concept.
People to know our name, you know, to know what we stand for, you know, to see us. And when community can turn around to you and invite you in and make you part of that family. And, you know, we've got to get yes. over that family is blood or family is color, family is religion, family is nationality. I mean, you've got a wonderful smokers board there where you had people from all over the world under your wing. And that's the beauty of it, is accepting each other's differences, embracing them, learning right. and celebrating them. Yes. And then you were a better person because of it.
And because that's you asked me earlier the things that I as far as the differences in the culture, but the number one thing that I've learned from this experience is that people were people. I mean, yeah. if you take away the language barriers and of course, everyone, like I said, when I initially came over, I was like, USA, USA, we're the best at everything. And of course, you know, if you're going to understand the culture, you have to let that go somewhat because you have, yeah. to have to live in the culture. So once I realized that everyone else is basically the same. If you're in Germany, it's like Germany, you're in Deutschland.
Yeah.
In Swadia. Now, you don't speak Norse, they will tell you in Norway and Pratadansk in Denmark. So, you know, everyone is very patriotic because you're raised that way. But if you yes. actually took away the languages, which is something that I managed to do, because what I did, I coached only in English. Mm-hmm. So I stripped their language away.
Right.
So we had to communicate to each other in the same language, even though we were different cultures.
Right.
And it was beautiful. It just helped the process of uniting a lot faster, because language is a natural barrier that's designed to be just that, a barrier, to keep people within inside of a certain border. So that's one way of doing it, is having a unified language. But that's a unique observation. Culture that I have observed. Once you take away the language and the obvious cultural differences, the basic people, the way they really want to treat one another, is the same.
Most people really want to treat each other kindly, don't they? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and they're like, I can't believe you have this. You don't have insurance, medical insurance in the USA. Tell me, because and it's the same thing Americans would say too. But we are so propagandized that in the USA, Americans think that national healthcare is a bad thing.
Yeah, I know.
they actually believe that. They actually believe that to their hearts. And I just can only smile and respect their opinion. But I just like wow, that's powerful. They're trying to do something to give you insurance so you can take your child to the hospital no matter what your economic level is. And you're voting against
it. I know.
Okay.
And you know,
So that's
the it's
amazing.
sad when you're still looking at a country that, you know, potentially could be as great as America. And I had wanted to live there at one point and was going to take a technology in there to be developed. And then, you know, we got shut out. And in retrospect, probably just as well, because, you know, it's a whole, you know, from an outsider's point of view, we really feel more like it's homeland that runs America now.
Right.
And the powers that be behind it. And we don't think there, you
Right.
know, there's any common rights there. But when you look at that, you've still got, you know, your Republicans and your Democrats, and you've still got, you know, your Texans and your Californians. So you've still got everybody still so opposed to each other, and they can't get along. You know, never mind black or white. You know, you're looking at the religions, and you're looking at the politics, and you're looking at that. And if you're still so fighting over the little things that are really trying to unite you, and you're so firmly entrenched that you're not going to change, then
Right.
how can there be any growth? How
Right.
can there be any growth? Because you're not
Absolutely.
allowing any unity.
You still haven't had a black head coach for an American football pro, have two NFL teams in Texas. You still have not had one black head coach for their professional football teams. And this is where I grew up. I mean,
Right.
and this is 2014.
I know.
And so you've had black coaches win the Super Bowl, but still not one head coach in either Texas team. So that's a great example of the division that still exists. It's underlying. People don't, it doesn't get so much media attention. But yes, when I go to the home of Texas, I do feel the racism.
Yeah.
I feel it like heat from
Yeah.
the sun.
Yeah. Because it just doesn't really exist in Europe, does it?
It does, but not it
Not
does.
in the same manner.
It's and as an American, people will see you first as an American before black once they realize you're an
Right.
American. So that's a unique thing, and it exists, but not so much in the environment that I have. But I have heard of like for example, African professional soccer players in Spain, Spanish league, people throwing bananas at them and things like that from the stadium. So yes, it's still.
Ignorance still
Yes,
exists,
and
yeah.
I think this is happening in Italy as well. So on that level, the hooligan mentality it still exists.
Right.
But in general, it's not so overt.
Right.
There, it's overt. Here, although it exists, it hasn't stopped me from accomplishing any of my career goals. Whereas in America, like I said, if I wanted to be the head coach of one of the pro teams, the opportunity would never happen at this point. So,
Go and die yourself, yes.
here it exists, but it hasn't stopped career opportunities. There it exists, and there are invisible walls that may never come down. It's just another form
So
of control.
exactly. So, I mean, do you I mean, I know you love Europe, and you've got some more opportunities coming up to coach elsewhere. You know, is this for you? I mean, do you kind of see yourself going to be where you were settled, or do you think
So
you
I
might
haven't
jump
given up
on?
on USA yet. I still
Let's hope.
my family have I have a brother and two sisters that are all based in Texas, and of course I have cousins and uncle and a couple aunts, and I love these and of course nephews and nieces. So I love my family very much. So on that level, I haven't given up, but and I would like to. Relocate to the United States. So no, but professionally, I don't know if I'm finished with my travels. Like I mentioned to you earlier, there's another interesting opportunity that may arise, and we'll see how that unfolds. But ultimately, I'm always going to be an American. I've never ever felt
Right.
like a European, no matter. Even though I've lived and worked here so many years, I've met some Americans. They go, "Well,
Right.
I'm European now."
I'm here 34
Like
years, and I lived
I was
11 years in South Africa, and I'm still British. You know, that's what I was born, and I live and adopt this country. But you are the blood you're born.
I was right. See, I was just in Switzerland like 3 weeks ago, and then and I was to meet with a team, and Bell, and I was reading because about Switzerland. So I was reading about how these things happen with Oprah Winfrey when she tried to shop for a bag. She was the lady told her that she didn't want to show Oprah Winfrey a handbag there that cost like 1,600 euro because she didn't think she could afford it. Now, but that's a, and she was there because Tina Turner, she lives in Switzerland now. She actually has a citizenship there,
All
and
right.
so I don't, I wouldn't, I couldn't do the Tina Turner route. She's actually given up her American passport, or no, I think because she's a, you know, superstar, they gave her a dual citizenship
Right.
earlier on in my career. I was in Sweden as a pro player, but I still ran. I was used to be a pretty fast sprinter, also track and field, and I was running for a track club in Sweden my first and second year as a professional football player, and my 400-meter time was comparable to the Swedish national record. So at that point,
Wow.
someone wanted to see if I could arrange to just get a Swedish citizenship, and then so I went to the American Embassy as a, and then. They just so happened to have a man of color who was the ambassador to Stockholm at that time, or to Sweden at that time, and he gave me a really eye-opening piece of information. He goes, he says, he said that America doesn't look kindly upon people who give up their citizenship. So he kind of he indirectly advised me not to do that, to just
Right.
to
You can't have dual.
you. Well, I didn't have any circumstances to have it, probably under circumstances, but I was just going to do it to see if I could make the Olympic team. And
Right, exactly.
the team. So that's probably not the best reason to give
Yeah,
your
and the
citizenship. You
many
know,
of
no
them do
people
that
ever
too.
could do it and
You
things
can
like
see
that.
that it happens a lot. But we're running out of time here, so
So
would you like to tell everybody A how they can get hold of you, all your various sites and maybe where to catch you next?
okay. Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening. I have a website. It's called www.mikecholars.com. That's I'm sure you'll see that in the print. And also, I have a Facebook page, Coach Mike Scholars. Feel free to go in there and like the page. My next adventure may take me to Tel Aviv, and you have to stay posted. I'll post that on the website if that happens. And again, although I'm a sportsman, I try to share my experiences in unity and how much true unity can accomplish great things for all people involved.
I 100% agree with you. We don't lose our individuality, but we bring that for the good of the unity. And then we create those communities that are caring and sustainable and abundant. And it constantly keeps flowing over. In other words, we keep spreading those good vibrations. Thank you so
Yes.
much for your time, Mike. You're a fascinating man. So, keep following that dream, keep following your diva, and just keep spreading that word because your philosophy is really a good, strong one. And the more people you instill in it, the more it benefits them, not just in the game, but in the game of life. So, thank you very, very much. And let's hope that we catch him in Tel Aviv. A
Okay,
pleasure, pleasure.
and thanks for
Until
having me.
next time, folks, be true to yourself. Excellent. Time goes very, very fast. We're already at that hour. I've named the show, Unity. Yes, we're off the air. So I've named the show. Your entire, your title here, True Unity Equals True Empowerment. Because it's a good statement, and it bring people hopefully to looking at that. I'm going to post it now, so that means that that link will already be up, and I'll send it to you. And then that's the link that people will have for the live show, so you can post it around. And then at the end of the week, it then goes to the cloud, which means then it's downloadable. Scholars, I'm sorry, my pronunciation. You corrected them there at the end there. So, Yes, I suppose, especially the British thing would be kind of the SCH would be very common for us to do it that way. So my apologies. Oh, really? That's interesting. Yes, exactly. Yeah, see. Full circle, full circle. So obviously you were meant to be, that European man because, even not you're going to be educating people when you come home. You'll educate people on what you've learned over there and kind of bridge those gaps and,
Thank you for tuning in to PLV Radio. We hope that our programming has inspired you. Please feel free to visit the website to find past shows and schedules. Find your favorite hosts, leave comments about your experience, and share ideas for future shows. Don't forget to visit us on your favorite social media websites, which you will find links to at plv-radio.com. Listen with your friends and share the inspiration.